Then they began to separate us. And the ones, as we found out later, the ones that they deemed strong enough for labor went on one side. If I recall, we went on the left side of the track, and the other people, the older people, the mothers with the young children, and the young children and the sick, they all went on the right side. To give you an idea how ignorant we were of the fact as to what's going on, we still had some food left. My father had procured a little food, and we still had some food left. And we found that my mother and my two youngest brothers and my sister, who was the youngest, were separated from us without any food. And so we had no idea how long we were going to be separated. So my father, I was the oldest of the family, and my brother David, who lives in Grand Rapids, he was the second. And then the third brother, his name would have been Sander, he was the third. He happened to be right next to my father, and so my father took a part of the food out of this little knapsack that he had, and he told him to take that over to Mom and come right back. Of course, once you were over on the other side, there was no way to come back. This is how ignorant we were of the fact as to what was going on. And as a matter of fact, all these years after he came to this country, my father lived with this horrible thing on his mind that he sent one of his children to his dad. Of course, he sent him over there to take some food to some of my brothers and sister and Mom, and of course he couldn't come back. So he lived with a terrible burden. When we came over to this country, he married a very wonderful lady, and she would tell us that many times at night he would wake up calling my brother's name. He would just wake up in a cold sweat dreaming about that. That's just with him always.
Do you know what your thoughts were when the selection was going on?
What do you mean by selection?
To go to the right or to go to the left?
Nothing particular. We just thought that I had no idea why they were doing.
Can you describe your daily routine in the concentration camp?
Well, I'll start from the beginning and try to go through the whole routine.
Which camp were you at, by the way?
We arrived at Birkenau. Okay. And after we were separated, my father, my brother, and I were taken with the rest of the people to this to these barracks for assignment. And they had these flat bunks that were stacked about four, I think it was four, one on top of the other. And the way we slept there was one, you would have a head facing out, and then the next guy's head would be in, and then the next guy's head would be out. In other words, you would be foot to head. We were stacked like you would stack perhaps wood, and that's how we slept. This didn't last very long. We were there for approximately 5, 6, 7 days, something like that. Strange that I don't remember the exact number of days. We were given, each one of us were given a kind of a dish, and a spoon. Of course, all of our clothes were taken away from us, and they gave us our prison uniforms, and they would give us a soup once a day, which was basically made up at that time of dried vegetables. And I remember how horrible it tasted. I was still, at that time, I was still not used to eating that kind of thing. So I mean, I was always used to eating wholesome food. And at first I couldn't eat it. And as I was walking through the campground there, during the day we were able to walk out inside the compound, I found this piece of cake that had mold on it. And I kind of picked the mold off and I ate it. And then the next morning, they took us over to the main compound in Auschwitz for reassignment to the different camps. And I took very sick. I must have gotten 2 main poisoning. And they took me to the hospital. While I was in the hospital, they assigned my father to a satellite camp, and they assigned my brother to a different satellite camp of Auschwitz. And I remember there were some sick people there, and there was this doctor. I wish I knew his name. He came by and he saw me there, and he looked at me and he said, "What are you?" He was full of rage. He looked at me and says, "What are you doing here?" And I didn't understand why a doctor would speak to me like that, and I told him I was sick. He says, "You get out of here." He says, "Don't you know that Mengele stops by here and selects people for his experiments?" And he got me out of there. And I must have been a very fortunate person, because I would not be sitting here right now talking to you. And I had missed, at that point, he immediately transferred me out of the hospital into the barracks, main barracks, and I was assigned to a work group, and I remained at the main Auschwitz camp from May until January 1945, at which time the Russian armies were advancing towards Austria. And at that point, we were sent on a forced march. And our destination turned out to be Mauthausen. At first, we walked through the winter snows. It was five abreast. We walked five abreast. And anybody that could not keep up with this march was shot on the spot. There was no such thing as I'm tired or anything like that. We would walk like that. We would actually sleep and walk and follow the column without knowing that we're doing it. We were like zombies. And eventually we reached the railhead, at which point they put us into these open cattle cars. And they transported us the rest of the way to Mauthausen in the January cold. When we got to, we didn't stay very long at Mauthausen. They reassigned us to different camps. I was assigned to a camp by the name of Melk, M-E-L-K, and that also was an Austrian. Mauthausen, by the way, is an Austrian, so is Melk. And I stayed at Melk approximately, let's see, this was January, probably about 2.5-3 months. And the work we did there were in coal mines. By this time, our conditions were quite bad. We were really run down. And then the Russian armies were advancing again, and again we found ourselves marching to the next camp, which eventually turned out to be Ebensee. That also is in Austria. That was my final and last camp where I was liberated. At Ebensee, we no longer did any work. We were there approximately for about 4 weeks, and we were approximately every day, the population of the camp was approximately 18,000 people, 18,000 prisoners. And every day there would be a new transport of people coming in there, and they numbered in the hundreds. And it seemed like every night when they took their head gun, there were 18,000 people. And they didn't kill anybody. People just died. We were all, we just became skeletons, walking skeletons. There's some very horrid stories that I experienced at that particular camp. We found ourselves intermingled with some Russian prisoners. These were either from Russian civilians or Russian army people. One day, you couldn't find a blade of grass in the camp. We just ate it. I mean, we considered that salad, vegetables. One day, these two Russians walked in to our barrack, and they had a piece of meat on a piece of paper, and they were selling it. They wanted two cigarettes for it. Some people had cigarettes. And there was this guy, he bought that piece of meat for two cigarettes. And I felt terrible. I felt extremely down, and that I didn't have the cigarettes to buy that piece of meat. I had no idea how I would have cooked it, but it was just something that I haven't seen for a long time. The food that we would receive at that particular camp, we had probably a company of maybe 200-300 SS that guarded us. And whatever potatoes these people had for their meal that day, they would cook those peelings, those potato peelings, and serve it to 18,000 people. And that was everything, that was the total food that you would get there. And if you found 3, 4, 5 peels of potato in your soup, you considered that you had a good, thick soup. And so you can imagine that when I saw that piece of meat, how badly I wanted it. Well, that I was very saddened by the fact that I wasn't able to procure that meat, and I started walking out of the barrack. And then when I walked out, I found out where they got that meat. There was a body lying there, and the only place that there was any meat left on these human skeletons was on the buttock. And they cut that piece off, and they sold it for two cigarettes. Of course, the person that bought it had no idea it was human flesh. But we were reduced to that. And by the time, we were there for about 4 weeks, by the time these 4 weeks were up, I was down to nothing but skin and bone. And I remember one day, all the SS, all the guards disappeared from the camp. We didn't know what was happening. Next thing we knew, we saw a jeep with soldiers pull up. And of course, at that time, we didn't recognize them, but they were American soldiers. And they found us there. And of course, as soon as they opened up the gates and the first thing they did was bring a couple of field kitchens in there. And they cooked a beautiful thick stew, you know, with meat and peas and the usual, and potatoes and whatever, carrots, whatever goes into a stew. And all the people that had strength would line up there and try to get some of that food. I was so weak that even though I started almost at the head of the line, they kept pushing me back. And by the time I got up to the kitchen, all the food was gone. And again, that was the luckiest thing that could have happened to me at that particular time. Again, my luck held out. Most of the people that ate that food, if they would put it in their mouth, it would go right through their intestines and come out, because we hadn't had any food for quite a while, and our system couldn't hold the food, and it would kill them. They would walk around for a while with a smile on their face, and next thing you'd see, they would keel over. And my life was saved by the fact that I was too weak to get up there in line to get some food.
I don't even know what that noise is.
And of course, That's when I was liberated. And that particular day happened to be May the 5th, 1945, and that was my birthday, May the 5th, 1945. It's a very nice birthday present.
Okay. Were you aware of what day it was when they before they liberated you?
No. But we found out later that that was May the 5th. I didn't know, actually, I didn't know it was my birthday till approximately maybe a week later. When we were starting to regain some of our strength, we started asking different questions, and that's when I found out that the date that we were liberated on was May the 5th.
Do you know what people were called that were all the skin and bone?
We were called Musulman.
Is that the pronunciation?
Yes.
Can I go back to the concentration camps?
Sure.
Okay. You were in a work camp at... You were in Birkenau a very short time, and then you went to Auschwitz.
Right. Mm-hmm.
In Auschwitz, you were there at the main camp for most of the time. What was it, a year?
I was there from May until sometimes in May, a latter part of May until January.
Can you tell me what you
May
did?
May the 17th seems to pop into my mind, and I don't know whether that was the day we arrived in Auschwitz or whether that was the day we went to the brick factory. We left for Auschwitz, but the 17th seems to be a figure that keeps popping back into my mind as we go along with the conversation.
Okay. If you happen to think of what it is at any point, let me know.
Yeah, okay.
What kind of work did you do in Auschwitz?
I was assigned to a rail yard, in German they call it a magazine, which means warehouse. And they had building supplies there, all kinds of building supplies. And they would bring in trainloads of brick, trainloads of concrete, cement bags. When I say concrete, I mean cement bag. Steel reinforcements for the cement and toilet seats and everything that has to do with building materials. This was a big area that they seem to keep that as a warehouse. Some of the materials were inside buildings and some of them were outside. And my first job there was we were unloading brick of these flat cars. And the way we unloaded the brick was you didn't just go there and grab a couple bricks. They would throw you four bricks at a time, you were supposed to catch it and then throw it to the next guy. And heaven help you if you drop one of those. They would pounce on you and they would beat you up. And then you'd have to get back up there and go back to work. If you recall earlier in the conversation, I mentioned to you the fact that I had an uncle who sent a postcard to us in 1942. I was taken to the concentration camp from Belgium. I met him at Auschwitz, and he happened to be in the same work group. And of course, he was a long-time prisoner there, and he knew his way around the ropes, so to speak. And he knew the proper people, and he was able, after a while, to make life a little easier for me, and they took me away from the unloading of the freight car. Those were the worst jobs. I was very fortunate. I had many breaks in the concentration camp over this period of time, and perhaps I wouldn't have survived without it. And I was one of the fortunate. And you had to have breaks. The people that survived were the ones that were fortunate and had breaks along the way. Otherwise, it was just impossible. And he eventually got me into a work group where we would sit over these heavy steel, it looked like a rail, the kind of rails that the train would run on, except they were much taller and wider. And we would have these sledgehammers, and our job was to straighten out these steel ties that would go into the concrete. So they would get there all bent out of shape, and we would straighten them out by hammering them mm-hmm. out. The noise in there was absolutely deafening. As a matter of fact, I lost a good part of my hearing there. That affects me to this day. But it was much easier. It was much, and you weren't under the same kind of pressure. We didn't have this. It was a smaller group of people, and we had a specific job, and they didn't quite treat us as harshly as they did my poor brethren that were out there working, unloading these freight trains. So I was very fortunate in that respect. And this lasted pretty much over the period of time. As time went by, we had some air raids. We had some of the Russian bombers would fly over there. And rather than bomb the crematoria, they bombed this particular area where all these materials were. They must have known that we were there, but I guess these were considered war supplies perhaps, and they were trying to destroy them. One of the bombs landed very close to us, and it didn't explode. So there again, I was lucky. I had a number of different occurrences where I was had perhaps more than my share of luck by surviving this ordeal.
Did you have any relationship with other prisoners? Question before that. Did you ask your uncle what the reason was for sending you the postcard?
He said, yes, as a matter of fact, I did. And he told me that at that particular time, they handed out all the prisoners a postcard, several postcards, and they were instructed to send to friends and relatives throughout Eastern Europe. And they were told what to write. And I suppose this was part of their way of putting, giving people a false sense of security. But they, whatever it was, they succeeded. At least in our case, they did.
Can you tell me about the sanitation conditions at the camp, at the concentration camp?
Well, we had mainly at the workplace, we had outhouses. One of the best jobs was to be somebody who took care of the outhouse. There was one man there. He probably had the easiest job in the whole group. His job was to make sure that the outhouse was that nobody dirtied the outhouse. So it was really strange with all these things. It was a very strange paradox with the Germans. Here they were trying to destroy all these people, but they were interested in sanitation.
Did you have a relationship with other prisoners?
I don't understand the question. What do you mean by that?
Well, other than your uncle, did you have, like, other men? Did you talk? Did you have friendship?
Oh, sure. We had our camaraderie, if you want to call it that. Right. As a matter of fact, we even carved a chess set out of wood, and we would play chess sometimes at the beginning when we still had our strength, but later on, of course, we couldn't do that anymore. But at the beginning, we would try to keep things as normal as possible, to what extent you could, but there wasn't really too much opportunity for that.
What kind of food did they give you in the concentration camp for a meal?
At Auschwitz, it wasn't, at the beginning, it wasn't really bad. It actually, at all times, it was a planned starvation kind of a diet. All people were actually the way they were trying to run things was that everybody at one point would become too weak to continue, and then they would just take them away and destroy them. They would have these selections. All of a sudden, middle of the night, they would announced that everybody must get out from the barracks, and they would take us, not all people, all Jews, because they were also political prisoners there and some criminals. And they would announce that all Jewish prisoners would have to come out, and we would all go to the bathhouse, and we would undress. Of course, we would leave the barracks undressed, okay? And we would go out. They would take us to the bathhouse, and you would have to go through a line there. And there would be a couple of the German sergeants, and they would and Dr. Mengele, and they would select the people that they considered no longer fit to work. And those people, of course, were taken to Birkenau and put through the gas chambers. And they didn't necessarily take the weak ones. If they didn't like the way you walked through there, sometimes they wouldn't even look. He would have a walking cane, and he would hold it with the wrong way. In other words, that the handle would be reaching out. And as you walk by, he would just hook you on the leg or the arm, some pull you over, and all they would do is just take your number. And you go back to sleep with the rest of them. The next day, when we would line up to go to work, they would call out these numbers, and the numbers would have to step out, and they were segregated and taken by truck to Birkenau and taken through the gas chambers. So the food actually was planned that way, that eventually you would get too weak to continue. Basically, we would, in the morning, we would get a warm tea, nothing else. A warm water, it would taste a little bit like tea. And at the workplace, at noon, they would give us a soup. And most of the time, it was dried vegetables. And in the evening, you would get a portion of bread, probably about dark German bread. Most of the time it tasted like clay. And you would get a piece of that bread about maybe 2-3 inches wide, was square. And they would give you a cut of cold cut, about maybe an inch thick. And that was your meal that was all the food you would get all day. You'd never get any vegetables or fruits or anything like that. And it stayed pretty constant like that in Auschwitz, and that was the best food we had. And as the war continued on, and as they took us to all these different camps, it progressively became worse until at the end, as I told you, we were getting nothing but some water with a few potato rinds in it.
Can you tell me when you were tattooed?
When we arrived in Birkenau, when they separated us from the rest of the family, they took us into this huge hangar-like building, and we were ordered to take off all of our clothes, and they took away everything. Next thing they did was they came over, they had these prisoners who did that, that was their job. They came over with barber clippers. And they would clip the hair of the body, wherever a person had hair. Whatever a person, whether it was on the arms or the legs or wherever. And we all looked like zombies, we all looked alike. The next thing they did was we had to go through this line, and they had several lines, and what they did was they did it numerically. And my number is still A9327. My brother's number was A-9328, and my father's number was A9329. We were numerically. I happened to be first in line as we went through that. So, and as we later found out, that once you got tattooed, that meant that for the time being you were going to survive.
Did it hurt?
Not particularly. It was done the same way as you would do a tattoo. You could feel a small sting, but that was the smallest pain I had while I was in the camp. It's really I was in Auschwitz, which was just a few kilometers from Birkenau, and we could smell the stench of the burning flesh. And we could see all that smoke coming up. And I was there probably a month or 6 weeks before I found out what that was before the people that were there longer told me what was actually going on there. They would, we would get about a soap. We in the barracks, we had facilities. We had a kind of a community sink where you could go in and wash up in the morning. And you had to shave. I mean, that was one thing about the Germans. They insisted on hygiene. While they were destroying us, they insisted on hygiene. It was a very strange thing. At least in that camp they did. Mm-hmm. And they gave us this bar of soap, and on the soap was stamped three letters, R-I-F. And of course I didn't know what it was until somebody told me that stood for Rein Yiddishes Fett. It meant pure Jewish fat. What they did was they made soap of the as they were burning the bodies, as they were cremating him, fat would run off and they would make soap out of that. And they gave it to us. And I might have used soap that was made my own flesh and blood. I didn't know.
Did you ever see the opposite sex?
One time I saw the opposite sex in Auschwitz. There was a women's camp right next to the men's camp. And for some reason they brought in a company of women to work at the, these were also prisoners, at the same warehouse by the track, by the railroad track there, where I was working. They must have needed some extra help because that was the only time we saw them. But we never had any opportunity to socialize or anything like that. It was just for that one day we worked with them.
Do you know if there was homosexual actions anywhere around?
I would imagine that there must have been some, but I was never aware of it.
Were you ever assigned special duties?
When I went to my fourth camp, which was Melk, when I got there, they assigned us to these barracks strictly by chance. And I got assigned to this barrack, and the barrack leader was an old German criminal. We all carried a badge. You either had the star, which meant you were Jew, and the political prisoners had a different kind of insignia, and the criminals had different kinds. So we always knew who was in for what. And this particular old German, he was a criminal, and he was the Blockleiter, which meant he was in charge of this barrack, and he happened to be the same man that was in charge of the barrack at the time when I was first assigned to Auschwitz, before I went into the hospital. So I just, as a chance, he was known as a very cruel man. As a chance, I went up to him and I kind of greeted him, and I told him how glad I was to see him, and he looked at me stupefied, and I said, "Oh, I guess you don't remember me, but I was in your barrack. I happen to remember the number of the barrack. I was in your barrack in Auschwitz." "Oh," he says, "yeah." He says, "you'll be my Stubendienst," which meant that I was his helper in the barracks. And for a short time, I did that before I was assigned to the coal mine.
And then you worked in a coal mine?
Yes.
Can you describe it?
We brought coal out. We pushed those little wheely things out. We brought coal out.
Lots of work experience.
Yeah.
Let's see, where was I? Do you remember any form of active resistance that you could identify as resistance?
The only time that there was some kind of a form of resistance was the very last day or two in the concentration camp in Ebensee. Ebensee is located in the Austrian Alps, and the reason they had this camp there was because they were carving into the mountain there facilities where they had heavy machinery, and the way I remember it was that they were going to build their V-2 bombs there, you know, those rockets. And they never were able to quite finish that facility. But we were told this later that they had wired those caves just before we were going to be liberated. They were going to herd us in there, and they were going to just detonate the whole thing on us and destroy us in those caves. And there was, don't know how, but there were some people that managed to get a hold of some weapons. And they brought us out into the center of the field, and they were going to march us out and march us over into these facilities. And I guess the people that had these weapons stopped them. So again, I was lucky.
Did you have a weapon?
No.
Do you remember the roll calls?
Yes.
Could you describe one for me? A typical one?
They would blow their whistle and they would call them Appel. And they would line us up, and they called our numbers, and you had to answer. Basically, that was the roll call. Sometimes they would leave us stand out there, particularly if the weather was bad. They would leave us stand out there for a considerable time, for no reason. Other times they would just call the roll and march us off to work. They would always count us as we were going through the gate, and always count us as we were walking back into the gate. We were cattle. Nobody had a name. We only had numbers. And we were just 1 of 10 or 1 of 100 or whatever.
Were there showers?
Yes, there was one bathhouse. In the barracks we had a sink. You could wash up in the sink. But there was a bathhouse. And I was in Auschwitz about 7 months, and I remember being there maybe twice when I went to bathe. They took us actually there to bathe. And the other times that I went through there was when they had the selections. But to actually go bathing, I went there twice in 7 months.
Did you receive any assistance from Jews or non-Jews?
I received assistance from my uncle, where he helped me get that better job. I helped myself one time. I worked at this particular place there where we were straightening out these things, and one day we were right next to, as I said, to these railroad tracks, and there was this barbed wire fence between the railroad tracks and where we were working. And this big train with flat cars pulled in there, full of potatoes. And there was all this beautiful food. And I took a pail, and I climbed over this fence to get some of those potatoes. And all of a sudden, I took a look, and there comes this German on a bicycle. Now, the only place he could ride was on the side of the track, you know, because the way he was sitting there. And he's paddling as fast as he can with his pistol in his hand. And I knew I was, if he catches me, that was it. I didn't leave the potatoes. I grabbed my pail and I climbed over the fence, and he was shooting at me. Of course, he was bouncing along. He was too far and he couldn't hit me. And I somehow managed to escape with a pail of potatoes. So that was the only time I had some extra food. Some of it I ate raw and some of it I managed to cook.
Did you share any?
Oh, sure. We would do that. At that point. Later on, no. when food got much scarcer, we became more animal-like. We were completely dehumanized. But at that point, it wasn't that bad yet. At that point, we were still not too far from having arrived there. We were almost civilized. And if you had some little extra, we would share it.
Can you describe the guards, capos, or the capos, punishments?
Capo. The emphasis on the A. Well, they were generally just beatings sometimes for no reason, sometimes just capos had to show that they were doing their job, and sometimes they were not so much for the guards, but there were some of the couple of sergeants and a couple of officers that were more or less in charge in the area. When they would be around, they would, for their benefit, they would sometimes beat up on people. And you didn't need too many reasons to beat up on somebody. Anything would do.